the Record with Ross Reynolds. I'm Steve Scherer. Ross, you like trains?
Love trains. When I was 10 years old, my grandparents took me on the Union Pacific Railroad from Chicago to Utah. It was amazing. I was in the sleeper car, the gentle rocking that puts you to sleep, seeing all that amazing territory of the West float by. Fantastic.
Our guest called that the train sublime, that sense of how we feel about trains. Trains are a big deal for our region, of course. This past fall, Washington State got $800 million in federal funds to pay for rail improvements for routes that run from Oregon up into British Columbia.
That money was part of $8 billion awarded to other states to develop the nation's first nationwide program of high-speed intercity passenger rail service.
So Tom Zollner is the author of a book about the physics, the history, the romance, and the future of the train. He calls it Train. I wanted to get an update on where we were with high-speed rail in the country, but it helps to understand the romance that we have with trains.
A train marries the primitive and the modern in an absolutely charming package.
In what ways?
Well, it is the first vehicle, and it was invented by accident. It's comes from it's the direct ancestor of the steam engine, first of all, and it also incorporates smooth wheels on smooth rails, which is an innovation of British coal mining.
Do you remember your first train?
I do. It was on the Durango and Silverton Railroad in Colorado, which is today a ceremonial railroad for tourists, but used to perform a crucial function.
And were you on it when it was performing the crucial function?
No. I was on it as a probably an unwilling six-year-old tourist.
But you do remember it?
I do remember it, yes.
Do you remember the train sublime? Do you remember some feeling?
being transported into another dimension? Those are pretty high thoughts for a six-year-old. I do not recall train sublime. I probably remember wanting a popsicle.
All right, well, I'll tell you what. I have been on the Shinkansen. I think I'm saying that right.
Shinkansen.
See, I was on it, but I didn't know how to pronounce it. I've been on the Shinkansen in Japan, the bullet train. Mm-hmm. And I've been on the high-speed train in France.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought those were incredible. And like you, I said, why can't we build it here?
It's very expensive. At a low price of $30 million a mile and at a high price of $100 million a mile, it's enough to make state, local, and federal governments faint at the price tag.
China's doing it. China believes it's going to knit its country together.
China is an autocracy, which can draw these train lines at its will without regard for economic realities.
What are we?
We are a messy democracy, a messy representative democracy.
It's gone back and forth, the project, the high-speed rail project that has decided, the state that has decided to pursue it, California. I'm not even clear on what the status is of that high-speed rail project in California right now.
It's been bumpy. It is still moving forward. I am an optimist on this. I think that it will be built. Best case scenario, 2028.
You think it will be built?
I do think it will be built, yes.
$190 million a mile, you said? That's two high schools a year to support in California?
You know, for the inspirational quality that this train can provide, for the work it will do to get a fraction of the cars off the highway, but more importantly, to get those wasteful short-haul airline routes out of the sky.
All right, so that is the I'll come back to the inspirational quality. That is the argument that the supporters are making and that you were making too.
Among others.
It's too expensive to be – why are we flying from Fresno to Bakersfield or San Francisco to L.A.? It costs too much. It's too much environmental impact in a world where climate change is taking place.
Yeah, you burn so much jet fuel just to get the airliner in the air. So long-haul routes across the country, yes, that makes economic sense. But should we be running Chicago-Minneapolis flights, Seattle-Portland, Dallas-Houston? I'd say that's a job for a train.
Well, you mentioned Seattle-Portland. We don't need a high-speed rail go from Seattle to Portland. We got a pretty decent system right now.
At present, probably not. I think two places need it badly, L.A., San Francisco, and New York, D.C. Seattle, Portland, I think, would be in the second tier.
The critics of high-speed rail in California say right now it's a boondoggle. You're building a railroad to nowhere, from nowhere and to nowhere.
Residents of Los Angeles and San Francisco might be surprised to hear their cities described as nowhere.
Yeah, I'm talking about that first leg. Where is it going? Around Bakersfield?
Yeah, part of the logic behind that was, why build this train to service only two metropolitan areas when you're running it through a chain of Central Valley cities. There's still some argument about whether to parallel Interstate 5 or whether to take it over the Tehachapi Pass and run it through those Central Valley cities.
And you think?
I'm more of a supporter of the Grapevine route.
That's Tehachapi Pass.
Yes, actually, that's paralleling I-5.
Oh, that's paralleling I-5?
Yeah, because the record shows that the more stops that you try and load onto the high-speed rail route, you know, like ornaments on a Christmas tree, the more you slow it down, the less utility it has for business travelers.
But we have I-5.
We do, but we also have too many cars on it, and we've got, you know, a big carbon emissions problem.
And the train, you're convinced, all opportunity costs taken in, all ancillary costs taken in, the train would be a better economic deal.
I try and be hard-headed about this. I think that it does pencil out to a good deal for the taxpayers. Now, this isn't to say that it's a utopian scheme that's right for everywhere, but the record shows that high-speed rail does excellent work in certain circumstances.
California taxpayers in paying for between California, San Francisco and L.A. or U.S. taxpayers paying for high-speed rail?
Yeah, that's not just Californians. That's the entire country paying for this
project.
So
those of us who never ride it, why is it – what beyond its inspirational quality, why is it a good
U.S.
deal?
Taxpayers pay all the time for things that they never use. You know, I'm probably never going to be driving across particular bridges in South Carolina or Alaska, but, you know, I've still paid for them.
But at $190 million a mile, it's awfully expensive.
Let's not forget the emotional quotient. There are hard-headed economic realities, but there is also a tremendous inspirational factor behind showing the technological prowess of the United States, you know, as well as demonstrating that there is a better way to get from place to place than the way we currently do it.
I'll let this go in a moment, but couldn't we do that by, for example, perfecting electric cars, getting rid of the kinds of emissions that take place now on airlines through pursuing biofuels or other fuels, rather than putting something that seems like, if I may, an 18th century technology?
This is an 18th century technology that is incredibly durable. I mean, the broom is a, you know, 600 BC technology, and we still use it today.
It's no Swiffer.
Neither is the train.
It's cool for you, but what's going to get more people on the train? I mean, I know you're, how crowded was your train today, Seattle, Portland to Seattle?
It was about half full.
What's going to get people? That's even a reasonably priced ride.
It is 4 hours, though, which is inconvenient for business travelers. This, by law, is going to get passengers from Los Angeles to San Francisco in 2.5 hours. That is going to be very hard for the airlines to match.
Unless they come up with biofuels and VTOL. You know, vertical takeoff and landing planes.
I'll believe that when I see it.
But it is mandated. It has also got a cost assigned to it that keeps growing by leaps and bounds. Why do you think even that? What's the high cost now for this?
$68 billion.
Yeah. What? I mean, didn't somebody say he guarantees it'll be triple that? Didn't you quote somebody in there saying that?
Yeah, it will be more expensive than $68 billion. You know, I think that that is the present price tag. You know, these things always, of course, come in at more expensive. I think triple is probably a reach.
Wow, but still worth it.
Still worth it. You know, not every high-speed rail is worth it. You know, I want to be clear. I am a romantic about this, but I'd like to think a romantic realist. This, for its inspirational value, for its environmental benefits, for its sheer cost convenience for the passenger, I think it's worth it.
You went to India, which employs, what is it, the largest industrial employer in India?
It is the eighth largest employer of human beings on the planet.
Yeah. I've always heard that was kind of a rickety-rackety train system. How did you find it? Describe a train ride in India.
Well, it's not modern, but it is efficient in its own way. The trains do generally run on time. They generally get you from place to place. And let's just say that you have ample opportunity for conversation along the way.
Well, back to the train sublime. Describe a train ride in India that you took that brought you to that feeling.
I shared a compartment on my way to Varanasi with not religious pilgrims, but rather a couple of businessmen who were there for their work in the textile industry. And one of them was really upset at United States foreign policy, which many people are around the world. And, you know, I have my own complicated feelings on the subject, but, you know, I decided for the purposes of that conversation to defend everything that we had done overseas. And both of us were sort of giving it to each other. And, you know, but it was a conversation steeped in enough irony and enough sort of, you know, self-mocking humor that by the time it was over, we were good pals.
You don't think you'd have had that conversation anywhere but a train?
I think that the train made it possible. It was, the train was a wonderful enabler of that conversation.
Yeah, you also said something about trains, and let's end on this. You said something about trains have changed the way we see the world.
It's impossible to imagine our world without them, from the shape of our cities to the food we eat to the music we listen to our very conception of time and space. It comes down to the railroad.
That very big statement I cannot unpack, but you also said that happens when you look out a window, that there's a new way of looking that comes with the train because of the constantly changing landscape, different than a wagon, different than a sailing ship.
Yes. Something happened in the first part of the 19th century that opened a new window in the collective human soul. That was the railroad.
Tom Zollner is the author of Train Riding the Rails That Created the Modern World.